Okay, welcome everybody to Planning Commission. This is a hybrid meeting. We have some joining us remotely. For those online, if you have any audio issues, just let us know. Before we get into the agenda, we'll start with a Pledge of Allegiance, and Commissioner Moss is going to lead us in that. Commissioner? Okay, thank you, Commissioner. All right, and then before we get into our regular agenda, I want to provide an opportunity for any public comments. Comments can be given here in the room or online. We'll just pause for a minute for anybody that'd like to provide any comments at this time. All right, so seeing no public comment, we'll move on to our first regular item, which is a consideration of a conditional use permit for Utah Wholesale Industrial, Michael Smith applicant. And just checking, is the applicant, it looks like the applicant is online. So
yes.
Thanks, Mr. Smith. We'll turn it over to our staff.
Okay, so this conditional use permit is for a company called Utah Wholesale Industrial Sales LLC. They are locating themselves at 130 South Redwood Road in Unit L of an existing building. And Sherry, I might need you to do, oh, there it goes. Okay, so you can see it here on the property. It is in the CG zone, or general commercial. And what they do is they sell overstock items online, and they include but are not limited to tools, auto parts, clothing, shoes, backpacks, and fitness equipment. They primarily conduct sales over eBay right now with hopes to expand to Amazon or Walmart in the future. And the reason they are before us today is because electronic shopping and mail order houses is a conditional use in the CG zone. It's important to know, I think, right off the bat that this business is not expecting to expand or really grow at this location. From what I've been told and what I understand, it's more of a temporary placeholder while they seek a more permanent warehouse. But nonetheless, to operate, they still need a conditional use permit. So they are occupying all of Unit L. And from that square footage of the office and warehouse space, they are required to have 8 parking stalls, and they have provided 10. So they're compliant with code, and there isn't any fear of lack of parking because the business will employ 3 to 10 part-time employees and 2 to 3 full-time, but the maximum number of employees on shift at any given time should be about 5. So with 10 parking stalls, they have 5 additional, and there is no pickup. It's all done. No in-person pickup or people who bought something coming to them. It's all just shipped out. So this location is primarily used for listing products online, general office, and then shipping and receiving the items to be sold. There is no outdoor storage, so it's all taking place inside, and they don't anticipate any sort of hazards or anything being created by them being there for the time that they are there. So the Development Review Committee is recommending approval of the conditional use permit for Utah Wholesale Industrial Sales LLC, located at 130 South Redwood Road, Unit L, with no conditions. And that's it.
Okay, thanks, Mackenzie. And anything, Mr. Smith, that you'd like to add on this?
No, I mean, pretty much we strictly sell on eBay right now. We're selling around $38,000 a month. We do plan on to scale. My background is .com. I work for autotrader.com, as well as I ran a new car dealership for 8 years as well. So we're leasing this. My back door is Amazon. So I was kind of shocked that it's not, I do the same thing as Amazon, ship stuff out. So That's about it. I don't know how long. I just quit my day job and we're trying it out. We might move to automotive car dealership, and we won't have to talk to you guys because this place is already approved for automotive. But I want to try something different because I've been selling cars for 25 years.
Okay, thank you. And we may have questions for you, but okay. Any questions or concerns from the commission? Alliteration?
Not here.
Okay. Entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. Commissioner Jorgensen, I move that the Planning Commission approve the conditional use permit for Utah Wholesale Industrial Sales, LLC, located at 130 South Redwood Road, Unit L, with no conditions.
Okay, thanks, Commissioner. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All right. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? And Commissioner Van Langeveld, you were an aye. We cannot hear you. You can signify with your hand if you want. Aye. Okay. We see that. All right. So that carries unanimously. All right. Good luck, Mr. Smith, in your business.
We'll do so. I mean, we hope it runs well. And our main goal down the road is to open a technology company. So, but we got to first experience what the challenges are in selling goods online. So we'll definitely keep in compliance of our permit. And thank you. I'm a resident of North Salt Lake as well. And
oh, great.
This is awesome. My fourth business license. So thank you.
You bet.
I'll contact you later or tomorrow about this for next steps.
Okay. Is that McKinsey?
Yes. Hi.
Hello. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so our next item is the work session item on land use categories, part of City Code 10-11-3, continuing an earlier work session. And is it Sherry or McKenzie that will sort of reintroduce us to this? Sherry?
So where we left off a couple weeks ago was at the beginning of publishing industries, and we were looking through the uses that were conditional and permitted and determining whether or not we wanted to make a change to those uses. So previously we've just went through this table one at a time and kind of looked at them in general, so we just thought we would go through them a couple of pages every time that we had the opportunity on this on the agenda. So we could start with publishing industries.
Oh, I thought you were saying a specific
with publishing spot. Industries. So there's two categories: general publishers and software publishers. Right now they're conditional in the CG zone for general publishers and permitted in all of the other zones for software publishers.
It's sort of like somebody set up a speaker in a bathroom. That's kind of what it sounds like.
I've got two things really quick. We should be starting with Postal Service.
Oh, we should?
Yes.
I had those written. I had stuff written down. So below. Because we talked about warehousing and storage. Where did you guys make any notes last time? Where was I put my line right there.
I stopped under postal. Well, this is, I went through and did it myself, but I think we stopped under postal service. Where is it at?
Which is 2, 3, 4. It's on the fifth page of uses in our packet. Postal service.
Yeah.
Going postal.
I didn't have any changes to postal, so I don't know that we covered it.
Yeah, postal service should be permitted. I mean.
Okay.
Talking. I can stand right here, and I'd be happy to stand right here and turn it down when you guys are talking, and maybe we can just have her signal when she's ready, and I'll turn it up.
Or we could turn the cart so that they can hear. I know. That's what kind of what we had to do at council, was turn the cart a little bit. But as long as there isn't a microphone right there at the podium picking up the sound from that, we should be able to turn it down just a little bit and not have the echo too bad. So we have to kind of test it out on how close we can get without the echo. And how I just blew her eardrums out. What would you like me to say?
I can actually interject a comment that
yeah.
I'm trying to be helpful here. And in the spirit of so part of what I was curious about was where this list originally came from and so forth. And one of the things that I looked at was online. There's the industrial classification system and the North American industrial classification system. And I couldn't tell whether they corresponded. I suspect this may have came from an older version, but you know, one of the things that the advantages of actually using an SIC code or an NAISC code is you can go to a web page and you can see explicitly how that category of business is described. So I think having a correlation to that would actually be advantageous. Although I suspect this is something that probably ties back to the old SIC code because NAISC came along later. Anyway, it was adopted in the U.S. But anyway, it's a thought. You know, a lot of times at the parent level, like for mining, you can probably do one-size-fits-all classifications, and then you could, within another category, you could subdivide as necessary where something had to be handled differently, but you wouldn't have to necessarily list every NAISC code.
Unless there was specifically a use that was defined underneath that we wanted to prohibit. Then we could just add those ones in, but then all the other ones contained within that code. Would that be more beneficial to the Planning Commission if we went and came up with a new table based on those codes with a general heading for the most of the things, and then we can work out what individual things we wanted to prohibit that we need or that should be conditional instead of permitted?
That sounds like more ambitious, and probably maybe the end product would be better.
I think that actually would help a lot.
I'd like to know what our
shorten it.
I think we can shorten it that way if we use the main headings.
Yeah, to the extent that applies to everything that's below it, there's no reason to itemize what's below it because they are organized by a major category and subcategories.
And then you would only list the subcategories if there was something that you wanted to be conditional or prohibited.
If we wanted to.
Yeah, because you could say that all of these uses are permitted with the exception of these two, let's say there were 20 things under one motion picture and sound recording industries. We were going to say they were permitted in all of the zones except, and then we listed, I don't know, drive-in movie theater, which we would want to be a conditional use, not a permitted use. Not that anybody's coming to do a drive-in movie theater.
But it's actually a good example because the impacts would be different.
The impacts would be quite different than somebody who's doing a recording studio for a music recording studio.
So this would take us, I mean, we don't know a priori, but this would take us from, it's like 450, 500 uses in this, which is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take us down to, who knows,
maybe 100? 50?
50 to 100?
50 to 100?
I think that handout there is the major categories. I did not, in the interest of printing space, I didn't print out all the sub ones, but anyway, I think that's what I handed Mackenzie earlier.
Modernization. So
the advantage again would be that, you know, if there was a question about what something entailed, there's actually a standard, a reference, and you can read that and decide if that fits it. Of course, you know, that's a primary classification, which raised an interesting question. So say somebody came along and their business was, video rentals and pawn shop. Well, and their SIC code was for video rentals or whatever that category that is. So I think there has to be some thought about, are there secondary SIC codes or secondary times of business that would be there? Because I suspect you may want to treat the pawn shop differently than the video rental.
Absolutely.
What do you think is the, are there any downsides that we should consider about doing this? And then we'll just kind of hear from the commission about what your temperature is on the undertaking. How much additional review time.
I think it would speed up your review time for the
planning commission. Okay. After the code adoption.
Well, after we went through and redefined this table.
Okay.
This way, I think it
would. So you're proposing to crosswalk it over to a simplified set in advance.
Good idea. Why didn't you come up with that
earlier? Well, I actually was reflecting on some of what Mackenzie said in the last meeting. So
I think that's great.
That's a great idea. I got thinking about the old ICS. I didn't even realize there was an AICS until I Googled it, but that's, I think, what's used in the U.S. And I think it's used for a lot of environmental reporting, maybe tax purposes, the businesses and forms that, we used to have to fill out in business. Occasionally that would come up as what's your SIC classification.
And we can, and even when we're doing business licensing, we can ask them for their SIC classification, and that would help us to categorize them. Because a lot of times we get business license applications and we sit there and scratch our head going, which category does this one fit into? And, for the zone that they're in. So
I'd like to know what we're choosing to customize for North Salt Lake too. What's different than.
Right. I couldn't tell you any negatives without looking at the whole list myself. But that's certainly something we could do. And it would save us a lot of review time, I think, here, if we did that on the front end. How do you feel about that?
All right. Any particular opinions from commissioners on this?
I think we could still stay on track with working through what we've got here on these two sheets, because it can be mapped over, postal shows up in the NAICS or whatever, but, so all of that, whatever we do today would be useful. I do think that the other thing that would be helpful is, there's going to be a lot of business types that are classified. We need to think about consistency between inherently similar businesses, even if they do have different classifications or categories. But, if ostensibly the nature of the use is the same here and the same there, you wouldn't want to exclude it from one zoning area and allow it in the other when fundamentally they're the same. Because I think that begs a lot of questions about fairness. So I think, one of the things that would be helpful is as we go through this process, if we actually create like a red line document, so you can go back and do that. And then between meetings, you can think about whether there's anything that strikes you as being conflicted in terms of, it's not consistent, if it's inconsistent between things that would seem to be more or less the same. They could be neighbors in a strip mall and nobody would think twice about it, but yet we could be treating them differently.
And if we went down that road, we can also take these categories and use the definition and link it over to this code so that we can codify that, hey, you need to match up in the NAICS. I don't want to say those wrong. NAICS, and look that up and tell us which category you define yourself in. Because it's really hard for us to define some of these business uses that come in, and some guidance from that would really help us. I think the original list from this did come from these lists, and then it's been pared down over time. And sometimes things have been taken out that aren't very helpful in what they took out was what they basically said is everything else in that category is the staff determination, whether that's permitted or conditional. So I think what we probably should do is in this category, we say in these zones, it's permitted with the exception, but specifically these more defined uses down, and then we decide if those ones are, if they're not going to be permitted in all of the zones, we just make them prohibited or conditional.
Okay. Another question. How does the future form-based code play into this? Do we need to be thinking about?
No.
Okay.
Because it's in, first off, it's in the, right now, everything that's will be covered is in the highway commercial zone.
Okay.
So it's, that's not even in this chart.
Okay.
So the town center would be in a completely different category. And and use is less, the actual use within the building is less important in the form-based code than what the building looks like, because we don't really care necessarily if the business stays entirely within it and it doesn't have additional problems with traffic or whatever else. We don't really care whether it's a doctor's office in the building or whether it's, what, I don't know, a architect's office. To us, that doesn't matter. An office is an office is an office. And that's gets back to your point of fundamental fairness.
I can quickly show you guys how our CH code is wrote just for the prohibited and permitted uses so you can get an idea of it. It's very vague with the permitted uses, and then the prohibited ones are like pretty explicit. So I'm going to pull that up for 1 second and you guys will see it, or in 1 second.
And that's how we kind of went with the CH zone when we did the amendment to take the CH zone used to be in this table. And we took it out because there were specific uses that were permitted in the CH zone, which will become our town center zone. And we wanted to make sure that those uses didn't come in. For instance, Maverick had this site across the street under contract to build a Maverick gas station right there. Now, as much as I like Maverick and I like stopping there first on my adventures, that was the wrong place for a Maverick, because that is the heart of our town center. And the last thing we needed was a big old gas station that was never going to go away. Because Maverick never goes away. They just tear down and rebuild. So for us, that was why we addressed that and pulled CH out of this, so that we could be more generic in the uses, but be explicit on the prohibited uses. And that's really what the state code looks for us to do, is to specifically say which uses are prohibited. I'd like to get very specific with those ones.
And here is an example. So for example, if someone comes to me and they want to put, like she said, an architect's office in the CH zone right now, cool, it's a general office. I still check for parking and everything like that, but it falls under that very vague cloud, I guess, or umbrella. And then we've had people come in on the other side of things saying, we want to put an auto body shop. We hear that constantly. And anything aside from a lubrication shop is prohibited in that zone. So it's really easy for me to enforce, because it's clearly lined out right there that use is not allowed. And I think that's more what we're going for this, right? For the total code. So,
can I make a comment? Can you hear me?
No.
We can. Sure. Go ahead.
So along those same lines, when Mr. Smith was just saying that his location along Redwood Road is already permitted for a car dealership, I'm noting in this current code, car dealerships are permitted in the CG in the MD zone. But I know we had a conversation about this last time. Did we determine that they are no longer permitted in the CG zone? That's what I remember. Is that accurate? If anyone remembers?
They're not.
A retail auto dealer.
An automobile dealer? No, they should be still a permitted use in CG.
So that's something I would like to consider. If you look at the CG on the map of zoning, the CG is right around the Foxborough neighborhood, and I don't think a car dealership fits in well there. There are currently some small ones. I guess that's maybe a determination. The small ones that are there I don't think are disruptive. I'm thinking of like a giant car dealership in the residential neighborhood.
So I think that the smaller dealerships actually cause us more problems for staff than the large dealerships do. The small dealerships come in and say, hey, we're only going to sell 5 cars. I'm never going to have more than 5 cars there. And they show us the parking they have, and they show us the display area. And then they start operating, and the first month they have 5 cars, and the second month they have 7 or 8, and the next month they have 10 or 11, and pretty soon they've got 15, and they've got dismantled vehicles, and now there's no customer parking, and there's no drive aisles, and now it's an enforcement problem for us. So particular uses for car dealerships, I think that's a particular one where we need to have better standards and have supplemental regulations for car dealerships that say, hey, you need to have X, you know, percentage of your lot for storage of vehicles. You need, you know.
I also, yeah,
a little bit more detailed.
From our last conversation, I did just pull up my notes, and all we did where car dealers was make them not permitted at all in the CS zone, but continue to be permitted in both the CG and the MD zone. And I agree with what Sherry just said. The other thing I think we run into a lot with the car dealers is we don't have a specific code on how many cars they can store. We just say, you go ahead and store them and make sure the outdoor storage is met. And we don't have anything that says how many display vehicles they can store or where they have to display their vehicles.
Or how much area they have to have for each display vehicle. So more storage of vehicles.
So they park, we had one just down in the manufacturing zone where they parked as many cars as they could between two islands, and they were nowhere near parking in stalls. And then they parked on the park strip. So that's just an example of why it's a headache for us.
And then they do two and three cars that are right in a, what do you call that?
I don't know. But the biggest thing is I think we need to add, I think they should be permitted, but with more extensive regulations that are more specific to the use, just because that is a headache. So.
Okay. So shall we jump in?
Yeah.
Are we starting then at Postal Service?
Yes.
That's based on the notion that the commission has gotten up to that point. Okay.
Well, and I guess we can sit here and go through this too, but I'm wondering if it's
okay,
if it's worth the effort if we're going to go back and draft something up for you. So
okay.
unless there are specific uses in here that you say, hey, I would like to see that use prohibited. I think that's the most effective to us, is to tell me what uses you think are.
Because you could put them in first. We'll have another chance to look at it.
Right. Right.
But if we can identify as many as we can.
Then that gives us direction to also look at other uses that might be similar that you would probably want to prohibit.
And I do think the conversations are helpful. Even last time we met about this, I got a better idea on what you as a commission would like to see and expect, and I'm sure Sherry did as well. So
like for instance, if we skip down to publishing industries, I think what I would want to look at is what the definition of publishing industries are, and if they're, because I'm sure that in some publishing industries there's a lot of waste. They have waste ink that they have to deal with. I think I talked to, there was a company that came in down by Praxair that did that stuff. And there were some environmental concerns with the ink from publishing industries. And I think maybe that's why that might have been conditional before. But I think that would help us identify when we look at all of the uses, which ones might be ones that we want to prohibit. Say if you have, you know, if any of these X factors in your operation, then that would make you be a conditional use or make you a prohibited use. So for instance, let's say it was a cabinet manufacturer, and maybe it would be permitted if they were assembling cabinets, but if they were cutting the raw wood and had to have dust control, or they had to have a painting booth for the varnishing, then maybe that might be one that would be either prohibited in a certain zone. Like we could have assembly in certain zones because it would have little to no impact. But if somebody's got to install those other things then in a CG zone adjacent to Foxborough, that would be a bad place for it. But maybe that's a specific thing where we would say, if it's permitted in a CG zone, but it has to be X number of feet away from a residential zone, that might be something we'd look at.
I also think along those lines, we have to remember things like what we consider an artisan craftsman. That's a new thing we've been discussing in the form-based code, where it's different than your mass manufacturing cabinet shop. It's a guy who's putting together benches or things like that that are more craftsman, artist, type of thing. So there's a lot of different variants of what we have right now is considered wood product manufacturing. And we just have to use our best judgment on how to decipher that.
I'm with Bill. I'll put my right hand to the square and promise to review this with that lens of looking at these if we want to table it.
Okay.
All right. We don't need a motion for that, I assume. We're just going to decide together. Everybody good with that? Okay. That's great. Thank you, Commissioner Jorgensen, for the good idea. That is a great modernization.
And a tremendous assist. That's why we have lots of different planning commissioners with different backgrounds that can help us think too. As staff, we do appreciate all of you guys when you have these ideas. I promise we really, really
do. I do think if we keep the codes and parentheticals too, that'll just be a reminder that
number
that
means
descriptions
something.
Out yeah. there and all that references there.
I agree with that and putting the numbers in. So
absolutely.
So we yes. can go look up that category, and future uh-huh. planners can look up that category, or the business license clerk can look up that category.
Right.
Really quick, just to be action oriented or try to be, do we want to try to meet about this again in a couple months or put any sort of time frame to it? I know we've got a lot of other things going on, but I feel like that's always the question of when are we going to meet next about it?
Why don't we give it a stab, because we have 3 weeks.
3 weeks?
To start. And we will then give you a progress report and show you where we're at, because I'm going to be gone for a week.
Yeah,
and
we
a half.
Might want to just wait till like October. Let's check in October.
I think that's too long.
If you guys develop the draft, you could circulate it, even if it's not on the next meeting agenda, because if I, you know, had more than 3-4 days.
Yeah.
So even if it doesn't fit on the
we
agenda.
We might be able to start with a framework, which is a table.
Yeah.
In the general categories, and at least get in the descriptions of the general categories. And then we could review those general categories. That would probably be more productive, to review the general categories and definitions of them so that everybody understands them. And then we could, as we go through those general categories, we could read off the other ones and say, okay, based on these ones, these are the ones we think we would want to prohibit or make conditional, or this is the category that we need to have a supplemental regulation that says, hey, for car dealerships, you've got to have X number of square feet for each car you display, which might be 9 by 18, which is a traditional parking stall, that they can't be parked end to end, 3 or 4 cars deep, and also on tow yard businesses.
So should, oh my gosh, should we just say the first weekend in, or first week in August, the first time we meet in August? Okay, I'm writing it down, so it's happening.
So, and our first meeting in August will be that Monday, August 9th, remember, based on our email. That seemed to work out for everybody the best.
Yeah, thank you for accommodating that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you guys being willing to accommodate it, since how I have to run the election, so. Because I'm also the deputy city recorder. Yeah. And I cannot wait to give that hat away. Someone else.
All right. So that's good. Let's go then to item 5, report on city council actions.
Oh, there was the plat amendment for the Root subdivision. So that was the one that was those 3 lots that they were combining in subdivision, plus that one parcel that was outside the subdivision. So basically taking off 2 papered lots off of our inventory of lots within the city. So we're eliminating 2 lots. So that was approved by the city council. They didn't have any issues with that. The other update that I do want to give you is that as far as the annexation policy plan, we're very close to the draft. In fact, that's what I was working on this evening before we came in here. And they are planning to come and give a work session, do a work session with the city council on the 3rd, so that they can give them an update of what they've been doing as far as their planning out there. And then we'll be starting that public process after that. So you will have the first public meeting, I believe, will be your, so that would be the 24th of August, we'll have a public meeting to introduce you to the draft annexation policy plan. That has to be advertised to every affected entity and the property owners in those areas within for 14 days. And then you receive public comment for 10 days after that public meeting. And then at your following public, at your following meeting, so the first meeting in September, will be a public hearing where you receive comment on that plan. And then after that, you can either change the plan as it's drafted or forward it on to the Planning Commission.
To the council.
City Council, yeah. To the City Council, yeah.
Okay.
So that's coming, and I will be glad to finish that project and get it off my to-do list. We had it, you know, we had hired a particular consultant that I don't think did the job that we hired them to do. So I'm pretty much rewriting it myself.
Is the momentum still there from the developer?
Yes, he's closed on the property, so he owns the property. I'm seeing additionally more momentum on the other half of the annexation, which is the Crossy Ranch. Their family is coming to some determination on how they want to split the property or amongst the children, or how they're splitting their inheritance and how they might develop some portions of the property to buy out those siblings that want to move away from the farm, and the people who want to stay at the farm and run it and have it be like a gardener village, but awesome or more awesome.
I almost prefer to just not know any of that, because I think we just approach it as what is in the public's best interest.
Right. Yeah. So, but when I'm looking at it from my perspective, when I'm putting the data into the plan that I need to, I have to have an idea of the density that's going to be requested for that area. And it's not necessarily the density that you're going to approve in the annexation policy plan, but I have to predict how it affects the population growth. And because that is a projection, I need to be able to project approximately how many dwelling units would go in that annexation area of 400 acres. So I'm kind of looking to them to give me some feedback on what they're requesting. Now, it can come to you and you can go, let's just say, for instance, that right now I say that the entire 400 acres, the average density would be 5 dwelling units per acre. So that's some things that want to stay in completely agriculture with no homes on them. And then all the way to the extreme of the townhomes that Misty River wants to build, right? But the average density, then I can predict that. But you might come into the Planning Commission and you say, you know, I think that we should say that the maximum density in this area should be like 6 dwelling units per acre. Or if we say these 4, you know, we're going to come up with a future land use map. So we're going to say, look, we're going to make this zone and these areas this zone. And then we can come up with those actual numbers are, and I can backload those numbers into the plan based on your feedback on what you want to see to recommend to the council. Does that make sense? A little bit?
Sherry, I have a question.
Yes.
I know this is early on in the process, but I, so far, with the amount of information that I know about the annexation, I don't feel like I've seen compelling evidence that it's in the best interest of the city. I can see reasons why the city would want to be involved. I can see benefits that might happen, but when I put the criteria of it is in the best interest, given the amount of infrastructure that is required for this annexation, I don't see that argument. So as you're coming through this process, I mean, that'll be a question I'll keep asking is, but why? Why do we want to do this? And I feel like that's part of, you know, maybe what we deliberate about, right. but as of right now, I feel like there's a lot of maybe like the cart ahead of the horse, but why are we doing this instead of how do we do this?
So what the consultant did do right in his, their draft of the plan was to do the analysis of the, actual impacts of, okay, if we add a water system over there that we have to operate, how much is it going to cost the taxpayers? And then how much revenue will we get from those so that we can offset the cost to operate the system and the against the revenue that we're going to get based on the growth. So that part of the equation is there. It's just some of the other details that they didn't put in that I'm having to go back and put in. Like, for instance, in area B, what that we're trying to update, which is the unincorporated area between us and Bountiful. So everything's fully developed. And so one of the things that you have to say is you have to be able to say, okay, the taxes on, so my analysis that they didn't put in, that I'm doing to put in, is that an analysis of, say, a home that's valued at $300,000. In the unincorporated county, this is what their tax rate is. So I've collected all the mill levies, and then I've compared them to what North Salt Lake mill levies would be, which ones get taken out and which ones get put in, and can equate the difference. If maybe it's a 3% increase in their property taxes to receive the services more efficiently from North Salt Lake than they get it from Davis County. So we'll respond quicker, with police services. Yeah. Fire will stay the same. Sewer services stay the same. Uh-huh. And those taxing entities still stay exactly the same. But we can provide snow plowing in a more efficient manner, because the county has to send their snow plows down from Farmington that are also going out somewhere by Syracuse, and from Syracuse all the way down to North Salt Lake. That's not very efficient or timely in providing snow removal. So
you're talking about the area below Orchard on like 3500 and 3600
yes.
South.
Yeah.
Two streets there that are.
That's our area B. Yeah.
Okay. Does the, sorry.
Well, I was just going to quickly note that we will need to deliberate this when we're ready to deliberate it.
Right.
Right. So I'm not sure we need to pre-deliberate it, but I'm not trying to cut you off. But like extensive conversation on this today, I don't think.
Absolutely.
But go ahead.
No, I'm just curious about the cost-benefit analysis. Does it consider the capital cost of the infrastructure? Because you said the maintenance cost. Is that?
Yes. I'm just not giving you all the details. I'm trying to be
in the interest of the city, I would hope it.
Yeah, in this. Yes, it does include all of that stuff. And it's very well done and very complicated. There's just certain things that they didn't take into account. Like they didn't say, they were just saying, well, this is X, this is what it's going to cost to install it and maintain it over 20 years. And here's the revenue that we will get. There was some revenue markers that they missed because they're assuming there's no increase in valuation or valuation added, because there's always valuation added with the new homes that are built. But then that adjusts the mill levy down. But you're assuming that costs for service and maintenance are increasing with inflation, but they're not showing that taxes are increasing with inflation at all. They're saying taxes are staying flat for 20 years.
Only the cost increase, but not the revenue.
So. Right. And so that's something that's missing in their data that I need to address. But the other parts of the data which they didn't address was, okay, if I'm a resident out on 2200 West and I have a home that's valued at $300,000, how much do I pay in taxes to Salt Lake County compared to how much I would pay in taxes to North Salt Lake and the entities of Salt Lake County that they're still going to be in? So we can positively tell those people, look, if you annex in then and you already own a home out there, this is what your tax implication would be in general. And it might be it's 3% higher, it could be 3% lower in that case. Because we jump once if we annex the area out at 2200 West and they dump certain services that are more expensive in Salt Lake County than what North Salt Lake can provide. So area B looks like the numbers to me is about 3% higher. You pay 3% more in taxes there, which amounts to like $100 a year, which, we could say $10 a month or whatever is your property taxes is what you're going to get from us. But out there, some of the Salt Lake, Unified Fire and Unified Police, those will both go away. And those are very high, those are very expensive taxes. There's also some bond things that they won't be paying anymore once they're annexed. So the tax as to the existing homeowners out there might actually go down by my analysis, unless I've done something wrong.
So one of the recollections I had is that area north of, what do you call it, area B?
Area B, yeah.
Area B. There was a much larger area of unincorporated Davis County 20 years ago. 25 years ago. Anyway, they annexed into Bountiful, that chunk that went into Bountiful, but a lot of that was unincorporated. But the big driver for the residents was trying to get Bountiful Power, which they thought was cheaper than Utah Power Pacific Corp. Are you aware of
whether it was
whether
or not?
That ever came to fruition or not?
I'm not aware of that.
Anyway, that was that there were people going door to door and arguing for access to municipal power.
And that's one of the things that I wanted to address, because there have been conversations between the Salt Lake or the Davis County Commission and our city council members and mayor about getting that area, that island, like 90 acres in there, annexed into North Salt Lake, because it is a burden to the county to provide services to that when it's so far away from any of the other roads they need to plow or anything like that. So, but I didn't want, I wanted to head that off so that we didn't have people going to door if there was some agreement between the county, because essentially there are some things in state code that if the county commission and the city council agree, we could annex that without a petition and without the signatures of the property owners, which would not be very popular. But we need to be able to answer the question of what the tax implication would be to those people and what services they would get. And so this is the first step to that. We would do a closer analysis when we do an actual annexation, but this gives us a general idea of, or gives us a snapshot in time right now. Because all that's the best I can do is say, tax valuations on these homes are this at this time, and these are the two different tax rates. I don't know what the tax rates change every year. The mill levies go up and down every year.
So remind, what, when do you anticipate that we'll get
the second meeting in August? So okay. The 24th of August.
All right. And then an additional item. When are we going to have the open house for the farm-based code?
That's a very good question that I don't have an answer.
Can we have the open house for the form-based code by the end of August?
Could probably. Maybe by the first part of September. We could probably do it by the first meeting in September. I'm worried about August just because of this annexation policy plan and our ability to do that much work between now and then.
In addition to the conditional use stuff we're doing, September feels more feasible to me.
I would not put the conditional use stuff ahead of the farm-based code at all.
We're okay with that. I don't know. I still feel September, don't
we
you?
We did that.
We don't put cleanup ahead of important substantive items.
So if we do that, then I would want to push this conditional use stuff off until we had that done, the farm-based stuff, which might be.
I mean, I'm just giving my opinion. Other thoughts?
I mean, I think the farm-based code, COVID, but yeah, it's due. We need to.
Okay.
We had a moratorium for that very reason, so.
Yeah.
It needs to be a priority.
All right. We'll move that ahead of the CUP stuff then. I'm good on that.
I mean, if you can have an annexation and a form-based code presentation at once to the public, knock them both down.
Hey, that's not a bad idea, right? I mean,
you want to kill us?
Involved. Give them.
Oh, we would get them involved if that happened.
Oh, yeah.
That's
the side of the room is annexation over here.
It's well, not.
Get annexation idea. People, and then they would learn about the form-based code.
He's right.
Both of them.
I don't know.
That actually is kind of.
I mean, pros and cons, right?
You're still only going to get 50 people. So it's
50.
I don't know.
You think annexation? That was really the purpose of my question. Is this bubbling out there? Is the public talking about this? I mean, are we going to get?
I think the only people talking about it are
we
going to
be the first
Salt Lake
ones?
County in there in that neighborhood.
There will be misperceptions. There will be a fear of collusion and decisions being made in advance or decisions being made in advance.
We'll get the first ones to.
Yeah, and so we have to just be amazingly clear that we haven't deliberated this.
Right.
There's been no
decisions made.
Arrangement with the landowner. None of that is, we'll have to be super clear.
He's accepted all risk by every dollar he spent in studies and plans for waters and sewer systems and every design and everything that he's doing, and also taking the risk by closing on the property before he has anything annexed or entitled. So we have made no promises whatsoever to him, and we're under no obligation to annex at all, because we can annex, the city council can make a decision to annex for good cause or for no cause. They could say we don't want to annex just because we don't want to.
I don't want the whole analysis, but does the report discuss what he could do if we didn't annex? Because the only argument that made sense to me was, it's coming, do we want to be in control or not? He could have development opportunities under unincorporated Salt Lake County.
I don't think it won't go into that detail. That would be in the, we would do an individual thing when we actually have a petition filed.
But if we have a sense, I think that's a great.
But we'll give you a sense
of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Have a sense of it, that this is going to have a positive or a slightly positive or a very positive financial fiscal impact on the city, or it could have a slightly negative or a really negative fiscal impact to the city. And then you may say, if this study came and said it's a severely negative impact, you may say, well, then we don't even want to update this plan and include Area D at all. So we're not going to include Area D based on the study findings. I'm not saying that will happen or that that's what they say. I'm just saying that that's why we did the study. So, and we're doing this plan so that you have an informed decision whether it's likely to be a positive thing for the city or the negatives are offset by these other trade-offs. What are the trade-offs? So that it may be negatively affect us in that we have to hire three additional full-time employees in order to provide police services and snow plowing and water. Maybe the water department will need another employee to deal with 2,000 more homes out there, or whatever the total number comes to be. And that's a trade-off, right? So the city council is going to make those decisions whether or not the benefit of having additional housing or additional place to grow or the additional revenue from Crossy Ranch, say developing some sort of agritourism thing, they have to weigh those against, okay, we have X number of employees we have to build, prior, and we're going to have to buy more equipment for whatever proportion of the share of their development would have on the city.
We're going to take their shots, though. The very first public meeting we have on this, we're going to get the question. As soon as we present the plan, it's, why is the city trying to take over this law? The planning commission's going to have to answer.
Absolutely.
I'll bring cookies, so we'll lessen the blow with sweets, okay? Or Andrea can bake us something.
So the plan, let the minutes show
like,
that McKenzie
prior to the public hearing, though,
bring cookies. Is that?
Yeah, we want the record to note the cookies.
This is of being pre-informed as to what the details are. So, people are seeing it for the first time and they're reacting to it and having a strong.
You're going to see it. You're going to see it before your packet, okay? So as soon as I have this draft ready, which I'm hoping I'm really, really close to. I don't know what level. I don't think I'm going to get it all done tonight, but I'm going to have it in a pretty good form. And then when I get back, I will finish it up and you will see it so that you will have it in your, you can sit there and be ruminating on it a little bit before the first meeting.
I think it's a good idea. I think it's beneficial. It's just when the public sees a city plan, they're going to think that it started with the city.
I've got a trailer with some tar and feathers. I can bring it.
You might need it.
You do?
Is it the city council's desire that we tackle the annexation before the form-based code?
No, I don't think they have a preference. I just think it's the.
Do we have a legal obligation to review the annexation in a certain time period?
I think because of the contract that we entered into with the developer to pay the consultant to write this form-based code and then this, or not form-based code, excuse me, to write, to do the study, to do the annexation deck policy update, to draft that, and then their failings in submitting adequate work to me, because basically we entered into the contract into September and we had all of the deliverables and the whole work plan worked out. And I kept asking for, can I get a draft? So in January, when I got a draft and I read it and I'm like, this is not a draft annexation policy declaration. That's what you were supposed to deliver to us with, yes, some of these facts in. And what the consultant did was a fiscal analysis of only the 135 acres that Misty River was developing, which is all valuable information. It's very interesting and it's data driven, but I needed it for the whole 400 acres. And I also needed it for Area B, which we paid them for. And so then I was like, what are you doing? They went back to they're like, okay. Then the big, because they were all in COVID, right? And so I think they gave it to a person who is less experienced, and he started going down some other path and wasn't paying attention to the scope of work that is in the contract. Because I sat there with them and went, here's the scope of work. Do you remember this? And he said, this. And so far, I don't have any of this. So then they went back and said, okay, well, we're going to bring the principals in on this, and we're going to redo this, and we'll get you a new draft. And so come maybe April, I think, I finally got another draft. But it was like it was written by a ninth grader. And now I'm just like, I don't even know how to tell you to fix this. All I can do is fix it myself.
Okay.
And so I've been working on that.
She has.
In so between everything else.
I want to just confirm, we're shooting for the second meeting in August to do both the annexation and the form-based code at the same time. But if that's, we're shooting for it. So it's not a confirmed thing. I know that's a given, but I wanted to state it just so we're not dying.
What would make me immensely happy is, even if we do not make that date, that we get something on the calendar.
Yes.
You know? Okay.
And I would like to get back with, we'll need to touch base with Allie tomorrow if you'll do that. I'll talk to you after the meeting, and get her working towards that. She needs something else. She finished up some projects. She needed to get back on something. So we'll put her back on that and get us some calendar dates for open houses. Because I think open houses, we won't want to necessarily have the open house for form-based code. It won't be in a planning commission meeting. It'll be around that time.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So we might come back to you and say, okay, here's our plan for the open house on August 24th. Here's the document we have. And here's our plan for the open house, and it's scheduled for Tuesday, September 6th or whatever. I don't know what the date, I don't know what the calendar is. So
when you say it would be around the time of planning commission, would it be like a couple hours before or a whole different day?
Just saying around that date.
Okay, a whole different day.
A week or two, so that we can advertise it properly. But we wouldn't do it on a planning commission night. We would do it like on a Wednesday night.
But we can definitely assign some dates. I like that. I'm very date and action oriented, so we'll make sure to do that. And I'll talk to Allie.
On task, you don't even know.
Whatever date Mackenzie has to make the most of cookies.
Yeah.
I'm not making them. I'm buying them. Forget about it.
We need homemade cookies.
I'm thinking Costco stop and make it happen, you know? Maybe I'll buy a veggie
tray.
By
September, we'll want pumpkin spice cookies. Pumpkin chocolate chip cookies, just saying.
I really will bring it. I feel like that might be the annexation meeting, I feel like might be a little rough. So we might as well have something to break it. I'll take Sherry's card. I'm not buying it myself.
What kind of cookie that we can use as a metaphor, you know, for the city?
Okay. Like, I'll work on it. That's my job. Sherry will write it and I'll get the cookies.
All right. Thanks. Any other items on item five that we need to talk about? I think we got item five then. All right, right on. So now we're on the approval of minutes from June 22. Are there any changes to the draft minutes?
So just one small typographical change. Page 2, line 60, says no requesting. And I think it should say now requesting.
That's great. Any other changes to note?
think line 38, by combining the lots, it would eliminate the ability instead of that would. Maybe that does make sense now that I reread it. It's probably okay. Sorry, Andrea. By combining the lots, that would eliminate the ability to build homes. I think it's right.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Commissioner Jorgensen, I motion that we approve the minutes as drafted with that one typographical correction.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
From Commissioner Ward. All in favor say aye.
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 All right. Thanks, everybody. We are adjourned until... next time we'll bring the sign up sheet for the potluck so we can hit some bases.
Dibs on cookies.
Alisa, are you in Oregon still?
Yes, I am at the beach. You can't see it through all of this, but it's wonderful. Wonderful. Love it. It's cold here though. I know you're not feeling cold.
I know you're wearing a sweater and.
Yeah, it's cold here, like 65.
That seems cozy and wonderful.
It is. It is. This is the first time we've ever done a major summer away like this with my kids, and it's pretty great.
That's awesome. Hey, thanks everybody.
Thank you.